Good morning. And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Fellowship Society, whatever that last word might be. We welcome people of whatever religious beliefs. We welcome you no matter what your skin color, no matter what your sexual preferences, no matter where you are in this journey of life, we hope to make you welcome here. I always encourage people to go to more than one service if this is a new experience for them, because our services are sometimes led by me, Reverend Sandra Ingham, please just call me Sandy, or by people from within the congregation, or sometimes by outside speakers. And this morning we're doing a mix of speakers from within the congregation. The opening words then are these. They were written by Andrew Bacchus. I've slightly adapted them. Come in from the cold. Make yourself a sacred home, if only for these brief moments, in spite of time, which shall soon bear us away from one another. Make this a family. Treat us as your own. Make us your religious, sacred, spiritual family, if only in this space, which we make sacred by our connections here and beyond. Come on in. Make yourself at home. Sing and love life. Kate, would you do the chalice reading, and Penny will light the chalice.
Blessing the candles. Here, in the last gentle light past sunset, at the end of the week, in the last years of the century, it is not hard to grasp after the receding light. It is hard not to wonder what is left. Two candles burning, insufficient light to plant or cook or paint the kitchen, anything purposeful that might claim some conviction of the future. There is so little we create. A few lines that take on life, a bookcase that stands steady. There is so little that remains, and always someone wanting. I could hand out quarters on the street all day, and no one would be saved or safe or whole. Outside, the street lamps are blinking on into a false pink phosphorescent cheer, and we are sitting silent in the wake of the candle's first flare. I am watching you, looking at the candles or the darkness between them. This is the blessing that we have kindled, this particular dark, this space between two poles which we, who are not angels, can inhabit. If you stand facing me, this is what you will find, the gap between us where our common lives take shape, the space between us that we reach into for love. Outside, the royal blue is deepening to black. The stars begin to form their million-year-old light into constellations which we, in our demand for form and story, have decreed. And you and I are caught between the candles, where we cannot help but live in the close and infinite abundance held between the kindling and the dying of the light. Praised be thou, eternal God, who has sanctified us with thy commandments and required of us the kindling of the lights.
You may, thank you, Kate. You may be going to say this later, but that's from a general assembly service you went to. Unitarian Universalists have family reunions. Just like the people in Cynthia Ryland's book, the relatives came. Well, maybe not just like that reunion. Unitarian Universalists may not be related by blood, but we are connected by something just as deep. Our Unitarian Universalist faith tradition, our religious heritage. When I use the word religious or religion, I mean all in life that is mysterious, awe-inspiring, sacred, unknowable, but yearned for in the deepest parts of ourselves. I mean that which calls us to be the best that we can be. Too bad the Army co-opted that beautiful phrase. And all that challenges us to find peace and strength within ourselves, so that ideally we will be better able and equipped to seek and work for justice and goodness in the world. Religious is a shorthand way to say all of that, more convenient than my expressing all of that every time I refer to religion. At least for me, that is what the word religion means. But we are not gathered here this morning to dissect the meaning of words. We are here to celebrate the larger organization of Unitarian Universalism of which we are a part, and hopefully to get some of you so excited and interested enough in what goes on in UU land in the region and the nation and the world to get you so enthused and fascinated that you will want to attend a General Assembly, if not this year, then next year or the next. And we could even tell you where they're going to be for the next 5 years. And perhaps you could get yourselves to a regional meeting too. We are doing this today because registration deadlines are coming up soon for both the June General Assembly and the April regional meeting. While this year's General Assembly may be too far away for some of you to even consider going to, it is in Providence, Rhode Island, the April regional meeting is in Wausau, just up the road, on April 11th and 12th. If you register for that meeting by March 15th, the registration fee is $60. On-site registration is $100. Big savings, yes. Deadline to get at least a $50 discount on General Assembly registration is April 30th, and that registration begins March 3rd. And of course, I have the websites for all of those things that I could give you later, or I'll also try to remember to put in Prairie Fire. Kate, Lou, and I will tell you a little bit about our General Assembly experiences, but to give you a broader picture, we have invited others to share their experiences at General Assemblies, and I will be asking them to come up in alphabetical order in just a moment. They are, I can't think of another way to do it. Phyllis Long, Mary Mullen, Barb Park, and Cheryl Robinson. I have been to 20 plus General Assemblies. I've lost track. Most recently, the one in Phoenix, Arizona in 2012. Well, I was living in Flagstaff, so that was a pretty easy one for me to get to. First official one I attended was in Milwaukee in 1988. Apparently, though, the first one that I actually attended was in Columbus, Ohio in the early 80s, maybe? Anybody else remember any of that far back? I just didn't realize until many years later that I had been at a Unitarian Universalist General Assembly in Columbus. Now, that is not because there was a lot of drinking on the bus that went, although there was. I was a member of First Unitarian Society then, and that choir was, at that point in time, one of the best choirs in our association. And we had been invited to sing, and many of you will remember the director of the choir, Ellsworth Snyder. We had been invited to sing at this gathering, at this event in Columbus, Ohio. I tell you this story somewhat shamefacedly, but mostly I tell it as an illustration of how insular our congregations are, how bad we are at honoring and acknowledging our place in the larger organization. I mean, First Unitarian Society was not as big then as it is now, but it was still one of the larger congregations in the denomination. And we're such a small group, such a small denomination. Small but powerful. And we will always be even more powerful and influential in the world the more that we join with other Unitarian Universalist congregations to do the work of the world. It also is an incredible morale booster to know that there are other congregations out there doing what we do, in, of course, often different ways. The first few times that I went to General Assembly, I was in sort of a trance most of the time, being surrounded by so many others from the UU family. There was lots of hugging. There's always lots of hugging. There's always lots of gathering around together at mealtimes. Also lots of quiet talk in twos and threes. Lots of laughing. Lots of crying. And I have even experienced what Cynthia Ryland called going to sleep with all that new breathing in the house. More than once, I have shared hotel rooms with four or five others. I think six in a room is my record. Once, I shared a room with Pat Watkins in Spokane, Washington, in 1995, I think. Many of you know who Pat is. She's not physically with us since about 3 months ago?
December,
yes. But she's certainly with us in spirit. And anytime we do a service about anything denominational, I think we dedicate it to Pat. Also, I wore this not just because I'm so tired of not having bright things, but Pat loved this jacket of mine and always wanted me to wear it when I went to visit her. So, Pat, this one's for you. And through all of these General Assemblies, none of us thought about Virginia much, or wherever we were from, because we were so busy hugging and eating and breathing together and going to meetings and worship services and getting to know each other better and learning about how other congregations do things and gathering so much wisdom from others about how to make this strange tradition of ours, Unitarian Universalism, stronger and how to get the word out about who we are so that maybe we will attract a few others who probably are out there. We know they're out there, and they believe what we believe. They just don't know it yet. And that's what General Assembly this year is going to focus on. So, Phyllis, since I'm doing the strange alphabetical order thing, even though you're in the middle of the alphabet, you will be first. So please come up and use this here mic. I think should be fine.
I have been a delegate from Prairie to two GAs in recent years, and it was an amazing experience. You suddenly feel like you're in this great big family that extends all across the country, and it just gives you a feeling of connection to all of the UUs all over. A feeling of excitement and just warmth, and I think that's where all the hugging and the kissing comes from, is just this recognition, and everyone is so glad to be there. You get that positive feeling also. And there are so many things going on all the time that you can never go to all the meetings that you really want to because they're conflicting with other meetings you want to go to. So you have to kind of pick and choose. But whichever one you go to, there's always a good speaker, and a lot of times there's discussion afterward, which is wonderful. And I just urge anyone who hasn't been to a GA that sometime you should be sure to go, because it is such an inspiration and it's something you'll always remember. And you meet a lot of interesting people from all over the country, and they're always in interesting places too. And then you also have an opportunity to attend, if you're a delegate, you get to attend these meetings where you vote on things that affect all the UUs, decisions about what issues you want to concentrate on. You get information to bring back to your congregation, and there's always a really outstanding special speaker that everyone comes to see. There's also lots of music and singing, and that also gives you a good feeling inside. And that's about it for me.
I neglected to introduce Phyllis by her proper title. She is the chair of our Denominational Affairs Committee, which is looking for members. And it's a committee that doesn't meet monthly, doesn't have to, so that's a good committee to be on. Thank you, Phyllis. And I was going to say something else about, Phyllis mentioned the business meetings. I neglected to look at what business exactly we're going to be doing in 2014. But Matt Tedesco mentioned, and I think Christina Clock too, you kind of got into it on the Sunday you did the service, that one of the things that we're looking at in our business meeting is changing that first principle, the one that says we affirm the worth and dignity of each person. We're not going to change it to say we don't affirm the worth and dignity, but we are going, I think I have this right, Matt. We're going to expand it. We're going to vote on whether to expand to include, I want to say animals, but I don't think that's quite right. All sentient beings, maybe? Is that the way it's, pardon? Is that?
No,
are you kidding? We're Unitarian Universalists. This is just the beginning of a discussion that will probably take years. But it's a fascinating concept.
Well, I heard that I could be talking today last night, so I got out a piece of paper and I wrote down all the things that I like about General Assembly, and then, you know, it got kind of cluttered here with arrows and things, and then I yellowed in the box the things that were really important to me. And before I even start with that, I just wanted to show you that what you get when you go, or maybe you get it before you go, is you get this book that shows you all the many things that you can attend. And what I usually do is I look through them all and I circle the ones that are most interesting to me. And then usually there are two or three that happen at the same time each time. You know, so then I have to pick there on the spur of the moment, well, which one am I going to go to? So this is the order I wrote down, and I'll tell you a little bit about them. First, I wrote excellent sermons. Some of the best sermons I've ever heard in my life, talks, whatever, you know, where they have you crying. You know, I've gone to some of those, and I remember one by Barbara Peskin, who at that time, she may still be at the Unitarian Church of Evanston, Illinois, and she talked about her experience with a man who was dying with AIDS. And, you know, she had us in tears about this. And the idea, the name of her sermon was Only by Your Presence, to be with people. And then I wrote down, secondly, performances. Well, you can go to two or three plays. One was that I saw for the first time was the Laramie Project. It was done as a reader's theater, and it was so excellently done. I saw it later here in Madison. It wasn't nearly as good. Okay. And then, let's see, I saw another one, and I can't remember the title, and it was a one-woman show. And the woman was it was about homelessness, and it was how she lived in a house, you know, an apartment, and down below she noticed a guy was living in a cardboard box, and how scared she was, and, you know, how she felt at first. And she was actually playing three parts. She played her own part, then I believe she played an uncle who believed in a certain way about homeless people, and then she played another person. And so you got all sorts of views of it. And the way it worked out, the arc of this one-woman show was by the end, she was going out and being a part of the homeless population. And that leads me to another thing about GA. There's usually some social action, and one, I think that year, people could choose to go and be with the homeless population in that city. I don't remember which city it was anymore, but I think they went, you know, under the highway where some of them were living, and there was a group who had done this in their own city. So there's a chance always for that. And another performance, they always have a concert that you can go to. I think it's on, I don't know what night, Friday or Saturday night. And this was in Minneapolis, and we went to hear Peter Meyer, and we brought home some of his songs, and Blue Boat Home, I believe, is one that he did, and we've sung that. And then I learned more about Utah Phillips, another singer, who had been in, I don't know if it was the Vietnam War, but when he came back, he was all messed up. And he was getting in fights all the time, and he got involved in a group. I think it must have been a home or something for veterans. And he got turned around so that he could bring his music to people all over the United States. And okay, so then that's performances. And you don't pay extra for them, they're all included. And then there's the Ware Lecture, and speaking of Pat Watkins, she was the one that introduced me to the idea of the Ware Lecture. And I remember when we went, the first one I went to was Julian Bond speaking. Well, I had known of Julian Bond when I was an exchange student down in Atlanta, Georgia, and I knew of him as a young man and had seen him. And you know, now he was an old man with white hair, you know, like me. And he told a story, his story that I still remember back from 2003, you know, 11 years ago, was that, you know, there were people standing by the river, and they, you know, saw a baby come floating down the river in trouble. So, you know, somebody went out and rescued the baby. Standing there a little bit longer, another baby comes floating down. And this goes on, you know, five or six babies. And they keep rescuing. This is a good thing to do. You don't want babies to drown. And then somebody finally says, you know, I'm going to find out who's throwing those babies in. I'm going to stop that from happening. You know, and that was his story about how we should look at the causes of things and try to fix them rather than just trying to rescue, you know, the results of that. All right, music. Well, I attended one of the music workshops, and it was put on by Grace Lewis McLaren, who is a UU songwriter. And she just sat at the piano and played, and we sang through this book. Wonderful. Workshops, let's see. Things your congregation can do to become more welcoming. That was one of them. Another one I remember was 10 ways you can increase your attendance or something for under $1,000 each. Thought that was good. And then they have something about breakthrough congregations. Every year they'll have congregations that grew like 100% over a few years or something like that. And they have like one of them as an example of small congregations, one medium, and I don't know if they have one for large. And they detail how they went about doing that. And that's always useful. Couple more things. The plenary, when you're a delegate, you go to the plenary, and you know, there are, I don't know, 500 people or 1,000 people at this, you know, who have to vote on things, and you know, how well organized there it is. And they have, what do they call the person that convenes the meet? That
moderator.
The moderator. Well, Ginny Corder was the moderator for many years. And she was so good at, you know, getting people to do things and making decisions, and it was all very orderly. People all got a chance, you know, you'd get in line for your mic and you'd talk for a certain amount of time, and you know, you could learn a lot about organization. And then I guess one last thing I want to speak about is seeing the cities. Well, I went to Long Beach, so we got to walk on Long Beach. That was wonderful. Went to Boston, took a bus trip to see Boston. I'd never been there before, except flying over. My first one, I think, was in Quebec City. And I had never been there before, and first of all, I noticed the people were all thin there compared to us. They walk, you know? You know, we didn't see the people like we have been in. Yeah, and it's hilly, and they also have many bike paths. And we learned a lot about history. A historian was the person who took us on the tour, and he was clearly a professor type and very good. So anyway, I would urge everybody to try this at least once. Well, I'll say the first time you might be overwhelmed. And I was, and I felt kind of lonely. And then I think the next year, people had feedback about this, and you could meet in a little group. So every day you could meet in this little group. You got to know them the first time, and then you could talk about things, and then you didn't feel so lonely. It's also good to go with someone who's experienced with this, or just someone else so that you have someone to feel at home with. So I could talk for ages.
Thanks, Mary. I forgot to say that was Mary Mullen. Thank you. I was in Boston also. I didn't see you there. I think it was because I was walking around Boston most of the time. And thank you for bringing up the social justice component, because when I was in Phoenix, there were 3,000 of us, I think, marched on Joe Maricopa's jail. That's not his last name. The Maricopa County Jail, and it was amazing. LMNOP. Barb Park, president of our congregation, at least for a while.
Not much longer.
Are you lying blessedly?
Oh, and I was getting organized to do this, I was thinking, how many GAs have I been to? And I thought of 3, and then I was up to 4 and 5. I think now it's 6, but it may be more. And but I also go to, have been to 3 UUMN, which is a Unitarian Universalist Musician Network meeting. And there's an interrelationship on several levels, but part of it is I tend to go to one or the other. It's hard to get to both in 1 year. And the highlights of the specific GAs that I've been to, I was in Columbus back in the one that you sang at as a delegate with my daughter, who was maybe 15 at the time. And I think I barely saw her the entire time I was there, because she was off doing things with other kids. So there are programs for youth there that are very dynamic. And when you get into the plenary, the youth have all discussed whatever issue is there, and they're up at the mic talking. I mean, it's very refreshing to see the involvement and in the process that these youth do. I think it was at that one, but I'm not sure. But I remember when we were redoing the principles, you know, the 7 principles, and they had sent them all out to all the congregations to look at for the revisions. Of course, you know, controversial as usual. And I remember, even though I had just read a history of it online this morning, because I was trying to find this, and I couldn't, but I remember these people standing at the front of the room, essentially writing the 7th principle. Because the original, and which is the the web of all inter yes, you got it, of all of interdependent web, right, which has come to be people's favorite guiding principle, but it wasn't in the original stuff. And I can remember these people standing up in a cluster writing it and bringing it to the General Assembly right there, and people were really excited about it and passed it. So it was a very interesting dynamic that, like I said, I just read the history and I couldn't find it mentioned anywhere that was sort of a spontaneous, from the grassroots thing. Mary mentioned the WARE lectures. Those are probably one of my favorite things that happened. The one that stands out most in my mind was at 2006 in St. Louis, when Mary Oliver, the poet, spoke. And that was an amazing thing, because it's just this huge auditorium with thousands of people, and one spotlight on this bare stage, and this tiny little woman walking across the stage, looking, you know, so frail and alone in this big place, and then just filling us with her thoughts and her poetry and her essays. It was just an amazing experience for which I would never trade for anything. I'm also love the service of the living tradition, which starts with always all the ministers processing in using that hymn that we started with. And because I've been around you know, a Unitarian, or been a Universalist since I was like four. I've gotten to know a lot of people from a lot of areas over the year. In the Service of the Living Tradition, they read who died. Mm-hmm. So that's always, you know, meaningful. If I go, oh, no, you know. So, and also it's the people who, when they celebrate people who have just been, are welcomed into fellowship. So it, that's an interesting kind of thing. I stopped being a delegate as soon as we got delegates from other things, because when I go, I like to be really involved in the music. I mean, after all, that's kind of my thing. And it's hard, I've discovered it's hard to do both, that the music is so involving that for me to concentrate on the music and to concentrate on being a delegate is too much. So I've, the last several GAs, when I've gone, I've just focused on being a musician as opposed to a delegate. The ministers always get together ahead of time for a, I don't know what you call that, but some sort of
annual meeting,
yeah. And they have a choir that sings at that for their service. Well, they always invite UUMN members to come. So you have to go like 2 days early because they want to pad the choir. So I've done that a couple of times. And that's, I've picked up some music that I've brought here because it's not quite as complex sometimes as the music that the great big choir sings. Singing in the choir, I've had a chance to work with some wonderful directors, Jim Scott being among them, who we often sing his music here. So I'm always torn every year which to go to, to go to General Assembly or to go to the UUMN meeting. I haven't decided this year which I'm going to do. The UUMN meeting is in Southern California, and of course GA is in Providence, so I don't know. We'll have to see. That's true.
Thank you, Barb. I didn't see you in St. Louis. I was there. I was in the third row to hear Mary Oliver, because that year in St. Louis, I got final fellowship, and Mary Oliver was there for me. Right. My favorite poet. And Cheryl Robinson, I know you've been to at least three.
Hi. Yeah, I used to say my husband and I, for a short period of time, became GA junkies. We just loved it so much. We were going every year for 3 years, and then I had a job change, and we really couldn't just work it out that often anymore. But it brings back so many memories. Thing that astounds you, and the first time you go, I think, is just the sheer numbers of other Unitarians that are all, you know, have at least some of your values and way of life. 5,000 is often a number around which the attendance is. So you've got all kinds of people from all over the place that are all UUs coming together into this hotel and thing. It's very, very it's just overwhelming to see it. And then, this isn't an important piece generally, but there, you know, overall, but there's a lot of pageantry that is very moving, you know. Like there's an opening ceremony, it's almost like the Olympics or something. I don't know if they call it the opening ceremony, but everybody congregates in one of the biggest halls in the hotel, and or convention center it usually is, and they march in a banner carried by someone from that church of everybody that's represented there. So you will see banners from just all over the country, and they're all, you know, the felt and homemade and whatever banners like we have, and someone from that church will be proudly carrying it, and they do a whole procession around, and it's just, it's very, very interesting. And when that meeting is over with, wherever you're staying, they hang these banners. Like if there's a two-story thing and it's got drywall railings, they'll hang them and hang them and hang them. And so during the whole convention, you see oh yeah, oh the people from Prairie Arca. Oh, you know, and so you just, it's just such a neat thing to see all of our churches represented so much. And the programs and workshops, that's been mentioned. I mean, in that book that Mary showed, there are things from usually about 7:30 in the morning until 9:30, 10 o'clock at night that you can be going to at any hour of the day. And I mean 4 or 5 choices at those times of each hour. So you really do have to take a book and make your own schedule and be willing to change it, of course, but it's just going to keep you very, very busy and intrigued with all the topics that you will find you will be interested in. There's something for everybody. I was there at the Quebec City one. They were doing some social action out in front of that one where the people from Canada were actually trying to separate off from the regular UUA. I think they thought we weren't being Christian enough anymore or something. No. What was the point?
But they did separate.
Some things. Okay. Well, anyway, that was going on outside, so that was kind of, but otherwise, it was a wonderful place to be. When we had time for ourselves, we took the 2-hour bus tour, and they have old parts of the city they take you through in the wall, and they have the new parts of the city, and you can get out and walk around and, you know, overlook the St. Lawrence. We learned a lot of things about the way of life there. When we were out in the country, they show how all the farmhouses and all have like brightly colored tin roofs. And the reason for that being that in the winter, when there's so much snow, you can kind of see, oh, there's my destination, that red roof, the green roof, the blue roof, literally. And we've kind of almost gotten to that here this year. There was a lot of outdoor eating because it was in the warm part of the year, and people who are that tucked in the winter, as we know, really want to spend the time of the year when they can be outside, being outside. And so almost every restaurant has an outdoor eating part. And at night, we've only got 4 hours of darkness. I mean, you would go to bed at midnight and just still be bright, and then 4 o'clock in the morning, here comes the sun, you know. But it was because of the time difference, the rotational difference and all that. So it was wonderful. And one other thing that you notice every time, they'll have an enormous display exhibit hall and all kinds of books, you know, from Skinner and from different presses, and all kinds of representation of the smaller groups that kind of form within, like the humanist group and this and that, will all be represented. There are UU jewelry. I got this little thing there 1 year. Just stoles for the ministers, all kinds of goods. And then a lot of people set up tables for the social action that they're doing at their church and raising money for that by selling some of the wares that have been made by people that in the country they're supporting or that kind of thing. Portland, I remember enjoying to see Pat Watkins and I think Mary Mullen. I'm thinking of Quebec, okay. And Mike and Carolyn Briggs. Now mind you, we'd been gone for a while, so to see people from up here over there was just wow, you know. And we also saw somebody we knew from a whole different UU church. So it was very, very nice to meet the other Unitarians you may have met before. That year, we had the privilege of being one of the breakthrough congregations. This was a small congregation in Southern Illinois, Carbondale Unitarian Fellowship. And when we arrived there 16 years ago, it was in a building but no bigger than this, and we had no minister, and it was completely lay-led for about 50 years. And then within a matter of a couple of years, we had all kinds of democratic discussions. I mean, almost every Sunday we broke up, and everybody had a say about everything, and we took votes on everything. But we decided to call a full-time minister first, and then work on building a church and having a capital drive, and getting some input from the people at the UUA. And we did it. And Larry Wheeler from UUA said, you know, he always called us the little church that didn't know they couldn't. So we were the little church that could, because we were so small. And we accomplished all this in a few years, and we doubled our enrollment and all. So we were honored in Portland, and there were four of us that went up to the beginning of the front of the stage. Last one I remember was St. Louis. That was very close to home for us then, so it was only about a 2.5-hour drive. And so we saw a lot of people from our own church would come just for one day or one afternoon, and that was very, very nice. And that was the Mary Oliver Weir lecture. That was superb. And I think that was the one. I may have it mixed up with another, but they had another session that was led by Amy Goodman. And she had Daniel Ellsworth there telling his whole story about how he got the papers that helped to publicize or expose, that's the word, Watergate. There are all kinds of interests there, all kinds of things that you may have thought about or known about in a couple years ago, and you'll find out so much more about it. So I'm sure I've already, going last, I'll have everybody have said everything, but I thought, I hope that I did a couple new things. And
okay.
But do go, you would enjoy it.
Actually, we do have one more person, and I did see you in Portland, because of the Breakthrough Congregation Award. I remember Carbondale being up there on stage. It was such an honor. It will be in Portland again in next year, 15. Yes, go back to Portland. And I would like to invite Kate to wrap it up. Well, I'm sure I'll wrap it up, sort of. Bye.
Well, my comments about GA are going to be a little bit different, I think, from what other people have said, because I have only been to one. And I was the sole Prairie member who went to Louisville last year. So for me, I guess the first thing was that GA is big. I mean, like, really, really big, overwhelmingly big and huge. And for me, I attend Prairie because I want to be able to deal with all of the life's biggest things in a room where I know everybody's name, and I have known a lot of you for many, many years, and I feel comfortable with all of you. And for me, that seeing what I believed splashed up on Jumbotrons was actually kind of off-putting to me. That I'm like, yeah, this is okay, but it's starting to feel kind of like oily car salesman thing. However, GA also has tons of small worship services, church services, anything that you could possibly want in a smaller kind of environment. So what I did is that I went to a Friday night Shabbat service with my Louisville host with the UUs for Jewish Awareness. And so that chalice lighting was the poem that was used to light the candles in the Shabbat service. And I found that service, which was actually conducted about half in Hebrew, which I don't speak, but that the small environment and the closeness, that made me feel much more at home. So I would definitely recommend that for those of you who have sought out Prairie as your home, definitely look into those smaller services, because it definitely gives you a much closer kind of feel. Another very big part of my experience is that I chose to do home hospitality. So I stayed with a member of the local Louisville UU congregation. And so for a very modest cost per night, I stayed at the home of another UU with another young woman from York, Pennsylvania. And so every night that I was there, Rafaelina and Arlene and I sat around drinking tea and eating, and we stayed up until 1 or 2 in the morning, pretty much every night. And that connection was extremely important to me, because since I had come as the only representative from Prairie, I wasn't coming with anybody that I knew. And so it was very nice during once I was actually at GA to then be able to connect with Arlene and Rafaelina during the day, to be able to go and have coffee or have dinner. I certainly came away from the trip with a really great appreciation for how very complicated and diverse and conflicted UUs are. like much even more so than what we have just in our own little family here. You know, there are groups that are atheists and humanists, but there's also Jewish and Christian and Sufi and pagan, and I know I'm leaving plenty out, that there were just so many. In our thinking about our own principles, there's been a big movement about, you know, how can we consider ourselves a truly democratic organization if the only people who go to GA are the ones who can afford it? So, you know, for me, it was, I was able to afford to go. The Prairie paid for my my registration fee, but I paid for my own transportation and my own lodging and all of my own food, and I was able to do that. And so for GA, is it really truly representative of us as a denomination if only those people who can afford to go are the ones who go? But on the other hand, then we voted to create this enormous region, breaking up or dissolving smaller districts and creating a huge region, which is now going to make it more expensive to attend regional meetings. Because now we're in the same region with Louisville and a couple of other places where it's a much longer, you cannot drive from one end of the region to the other in a day. So there's that kind of a conflict. We're embracing the needs of our transgendered members at the convention center. All of the bathrooms were labeled gender neutral. So there were no bathrooms that were specifically men or women. So we have come a long way as a people of learning to what helps to support our transgendered folks. But we still needed to be reminded that in the big convention hall that when something was done, to let the folks in mobility devices get out first so that they could get out and wouldn't be crowded in. So we're thoughtful and we're not. Now, some things that Sandy mentioned is that our congregations are all struggling with the same kinds of issues that we're trying to figure out. You know, how do we safeguard our money? How do we build a beloved community? How do we diversify our congregations? How do we increase membership? But it seems like we all, as congregations, feel kind of alone and disconnected in this, and we're all kind of surprised that it's like, oh, you're having this issue too? That we're surprised by that. And so I think the fact that, like, one of the things that's important about GA is that we can get our congregations together to realize that we do have these things in common. Other people have mentioned this, but like General Assembly is like a smorgasbord. There is so much that you can eat. You want to do Sufi dancing, they've got that. You want to wordsmith on policies, you can do that. You want to learn about financial auditing as a spiritual practice, you can do that. Yes, I did that. You can do drumming, you can sing in the choir, you can learn about social media, you can talk about environment or social justice or religious education or right relations. And I would echo what everyone else said, that sometimes the hardest thing to do is to decide which session to go to. But a piece of advice that I was given about conferences like this in general is that when you go to a session, sit in the back. Because then, if you determine that either it wasn't what you thought it was, or they're having technical difficulties and it's not going to happen, or it's just not that good, which does happen, that you can then sneak out without being disrupted. But the kind of taking that smorgasbord metaphor too far, it is possible to kind of overeat in a sense, and that then that's where having your connections is extremely important, because then you can, you know, find your Arlene and Rafaelina and go off and have a cup of coffee and kind of decompress from all of it. So this was a very good experience for me, and I'm grateful that Prairie was able to send me.
Thank you, Kate. Are we Barb or Al? I should have looked this up before the service, but we can send pay registration fees for at least one person, maybe two, to General Assembly. I'm not sure either, but we can find that out. I'm sure at least one. So General Assembly. Wrapping it up, and thank you, all of you who spoke. It can be overwhelming, expensive, noisy, confusing, and just as frustrating as any other reunion. General Assembly and the regional meetings can also be uplifting, challenging, energizing. These gatherings can fill your heart with gratitude that we exist, that within this church, this denomination, you are encouraged to be a free thinker, unencumbered by doctrine, or creed, bound together not by someone telling you what to believe and how to act, but bound together by love, compassion, community, and the search for truth and justice. For me, despite all the drawbacks and shortcomings of these reunions, every time I attend one, I feel a tiny bit closer to, if you look at the quote at the top of the order of service, I feel a tiny bit closer to unveiling the bonds that bind each to all. We don't have time for any feedback, but that's okay. If you've been to General Assembly and want to continue the conversation, we can do that up front for a little while. I don't know if you can, Kate, but I can. I think what we'll do now is go directly to extinguishing the chalice, because we are running a little late. And it's the words for that are in the order of service, if you'd all like to join me in saying them. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we meet again. Greet your neighbor and go in peace.